From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.
Have mercy, Mr. Attitude, Eric Wiltshire.
Well, welcome back after the break, boys and girls. We're now joined by Chris Steele Perkins, which means there's two Englishmen in Pot Bread for a change. Hi, Chris, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Now, Chris, tell me why you're here.
Well, I'm here as a photographer doing a special for Slovak Spectator.
And what's the, for those that don't know in America, Slovak Spectator quickly is?
Is an English language newspaper magazine.
Sure.
Which is published in Slovakia and it is about Slovakia.
Oh, yeah, it makes it quite illogical, really, doesn't it, when you think about it? And so what's your role here then?
Well, once a year they do a special where they invite outsiders to comment in some way or the other on the country. Mm-hmm. But the last couple of years they've had a photographer doing that.
Sure.
And I'm this year's photographer, if you like. So I'm travelling around the country exploring it with some students from the journalism course.
So you're training at the same time? A bit of coaching?
Well, they stand around, basically, and drive the car, but, you know,
I'm sure there's one of them sitting in the studio, boys and girls, and I'm sure he does more things than that. He might even carry your dinner sometimes.
No, fresh
out of that.
Nothing like that.
So, Chris, you're into photography. If people look you up on the web, there's an awful lot about you. What's been your sort of career to date in photography? How did you get into it?
Well, I sort of stumbled into it as a student doing psychology, and it was a hobby, which became a profession, which became, you know, my life's work, if you like. And so, I mean, my whole life's been working essentially in documentary photography, basically for the magazine market.
Right. So you don't have to be a member of paparazzi to get in and get on in the photographic world?
No. The paparazzi are a very small, selected group of photographers with a very special interest.
Nice political answer. Well done. Others would say different. So then, how did you come across Slovakia?
Well, when Slovakia and 9 other countries were joining the EU about 8 years ago, I got commissioned to photograph Slovakia, and some of my colleagues got sent off to the other countries, and there was an exhibition actually at the Centre Georges Pompidou in Paris, which travelled around Europe. Sadly, it never came to Bratislava for some reason or the other. But it went to most of the other, you know, Warsaw and Vienna and different places like that. And that was my first contact with Slovakia. And I became good friends with a photographer, Andrej Ban, who is Slovak and lives here. And we kept in touch. And to cut a long story short, I got basically invited by Slovak Spectator to do this special.
So what within the program of what you're doing here, what are you trying to depict visually?
Well, you know, I've got a slice of time, which is whatever happens within this, you know, there might be interesting stuff which is out of my time frame. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to jump around, really, both geographically, from cities to the countryside, from the Tatras down, you know, to the lowlands, if mm-hmm. you like, mm-hmm. and from odd little things like the May the 1st demonstration to visiting a nuclear power plant, which I've also done. So I'm really trying to just look at a whole cross-section of different aspects of life here in Slovakia.
So it's really diverse for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And let's just suppose we've now got somebody sitting in Carlisle listening to us who's a keen, maybe amateur photographer, and he's one of these guys that goes around the world taking pictures for holidays, that sort of thing. How would you depict Slovakia visually?
Well, I'm not doing a travelogue, you know. that's not what I'm
trying
to do.
No, I mean in photographic terms, not in a travel sense.
Well, you know, for an amateur, it's different. You know, the amateur's not going to get access to a nuclear power station,
for example. No.
But, you know, it's an attractive country. It's got plenty of things to look at if you want to, you know, from the mountains to the caves to the to the very, you know, Banska Stianitska.
Yeah.
Which I can more or less say.
I have the same problem, don't worry. As I normally say, Chris, Moje Slovensko Katastrofa, and you can work out what that means.
Yeah. So there's a lot of these small towns which are extremely attractive, but they don't sort of set them up as tourist attractions. But, you know, those central square and sort of medieval central squares are really quite remarkable. Mm. And I think they could do a lot more with it, actually, from the tourist point of view.
I think you're right, actually.
If they wanted to.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about the actual publication of your photography in the Slovak Spectator.
Well, basically, there's a sort of special section in there. The students are going around, they're doing more or less the tourist-type pictures, and they're doing write-ups for castles and hotels. You know, proper work. And then I think it's 26 pages that they are giving, which is very unusual these days.
It's rather large, isn't it?
Magazine to do that, yeah. Which is very, very nice.
Yeah.
To just sort of showcase the photographs that I take while I'm here.
Right. Any idea when the publication date is?
Yeah, it's not until September.
September. So we'll keep hold of Mariana and we'll find out when it's going to come out and we'll let everybody know.
Yeah, it's September. Yeah.
We look, boys and girls, in the back of the studio is Lukasz, and we're looking at him, vain hope that he knows the answer. Who's also a media student, aren't you? No, you can't nod on the radio. You have to say words. Nodding on the radio doesn't work. Where's the next place for you then, Chris?
After Slovakia,
yeah.
It's actually Sweden. I'm off to Sweden to do some stuff around some environmental projects there.
Oh, nice.
And then I'm back to London for the Jubilee.
Oh, that's going to be amazing, isn't it?
Queen's Jubilee.
Is that going to be tough for a photographer?
No, because I'm not doing the Queen and that stuff. I'm doing little street parties in obscure villages in Britain. You know,
but that's the real Jubilee, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the point. So I'll be in Norfolk, actually, in some tiny village, covering the Jubilee from that angle.
And I also gather, just briefly, that you do some coaching work as well. Is that right?
Well, I do a bit of teaching, you know, I mean, workshops. I've done a workshop here in Slovakia, in fact. I maybe do two or three a year, but, you know, I'm not a teacher. I don't think of myself as a teacher.
No, that's why I use the word coach rather than teacher, if you see what I mean. And just to wrap up, where can people actually find your work in terms of Chris Steele Perkins?
Well,
have you got a website or something?
Yeah, there's chrissteeleperkins.com,
yes,
which is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And then also, as a member of Magnum Photos,
yeah,
then basically my work is sort of available to check out on the Magnum Photos.
So if you're a student, that's where you can get some ideas to start with.
Yep, indeed.
All right. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your time here. And we'll look forward to September when your supplement comes out.
Well, I hope it doesn't disappoint.
Thanks, Chris.
All right.
The Station of the Stars, RTI.
As promised at the top of the hour, boys and girls, we are crossing to Washington. Well, I hope so, if the technology's working right. And joining Hella Dale. Welcome to Radio Tatras International, Hella.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to join you today.
Thank you. First of all, could we sort of find out a little bit about you and the Heritage Foundation, please?
Absolutely. I'm sitting here in Washington. We're having about 70 degree weather, and I'm looking at the office buildings of the U.S. Congress, which is just across the street. So very different from where you are.
Exactly, yes. Very different.
We're a large think tank, the biggest conservative think tank in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And the think tank, for those who don't know it, is a research institute that looks into public policy. We got 250-300 people working here,
right,
researching all aspects of government policy.
So
and I work in the foreign policy department.
Okay, so do you sort of call the government to task? Is that the main purpose?
all the time. That is what we live for.
Well, you're on the right program here then. So that's you. And then we came over to some almost unbelievable news last week, which has prompted an awful lot of questions, some of which are actually questioning the validity of my story. But we'll put that straight in a moment. The Voice of America. It is the Voice of America. It's, to me, an English radio station with lots of other services to encompass areas of, shall we say, the disenfranchised people of the world. And we shared some information that we found on the Heritage Foundation that the VOA is going to be cut to what could basically be called a campus radio station.
That's definitely a great way of putting it. It might be a slight exaggeration. It would be a large campus radio station. It still has a budget of over $700 million,
right,
even after the cuts. But the cuts, which amount to, in this budget proposal, to about $36 million, mm-hmm, coincide, as I see it, with a shift in strategy in messaging and communication strategy away from broadcasting as you and I know it, mm-hmm, which is on the airwaves, and focused much more on the internet. Now, there is nothing wrong with the internet at all.
Oh, no, However, I have to say, I love it.
You and I know, here we are.
Yes. The internet.
Yet, it does not reach every part of the world. It is not the only medium around. It is not even the dominant medium around. And for the U.S. government to look at its long-term future in broadcasting, and this is a government-owned enterprise that has been in business since the Cold War, and say that, shortwave radio is a thing of the past.
But it's not, is it? That's what
way of the future if we wanted it to be.
Well, it could be with digital, yes. But I'm thinking more, Hella, at the moment of the problem that governments have in that they sit in an ivory tower and they assume that whilst they're in London or Washington or Bratislava, everybody around the world has exactly the same facilities as them. And I have to remind them, I've yet to find an internet connection where I can plug a computer in the middle of the outback of Africa.
Exactly. That is absolutely true. And this goes not just for Africa, but it certainly also goes for large parts of Asia. Mm-hmm. It goes for large parts of Latin America, even Europe, even parts of the United States, for goodness sakes.
Yes.
So this assumption is a very, as you say, an assumption made in a bubble, in a technological bubble.
Yes.
Well, we all are checking our BlackBerries and our iPhones all the time, and we can connect with just about anybody we want to. But that is, we're not the norm. And we should be trying to reach the audience around the world that does not have access to all this technology, that does not have access to news and information the way we do. Mm. And in that, we have to look at a strategy that keeps alive.
Mm. Well, Hella, I wonder if we could just pop into the post bag at the moment, albeit an electronic one, it has to be said. But let's just bounce some of these off of you, and I'll leave you to respond, because this is from the listeners and they're the most important people. This is from Susanna, who's obviously from Slovakia, and she writes, "Hello, what is the point of an American station with no English? We use it to learn English in school along with the RTI programs." Thank you, Susanna. "In the modern business world, English is a must language. I don't understand. Please send my email to the Voice of America, Susanna."
Oh, here. I'll give you the email address so you can send it on.
Yeah.
Susanna is absolutely right. They are projecting large cuts in VOA English. And as she correctly says, this is a language that is used around the globe and people have learned for decades from VOA and the BBC and RTI and others, mm-hmm, how to speak it. This is just one of the outcries that is currently going up about the budget proposal. That this is not the first time that attempts have been to cut VOA English and have been fought back because it is a wrong-headed strategy. If we're not careful, the world is going to learn English from Al Jazeera, from China, the Chinese news agency, which is starting a big global news network. They're broadcasting in English, and we're stopping.
Strange. Paul Allen, who I guess is from England, says, Eric, I cannot believe what I've just heard on RTI. Is it a late April Fool, right? No, it's not. I've heard nothing on the VOA about this. How come? I'm not suggesting you have a bogus story. However, this needs clarity from a senior figure. I know you'll find out the truth. Thank you, Paul. Keep up the good work. Again, thank you. Respond to Paul Heller.
Well, the budget proposal of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which is the government agency that houses VOA and its other broadcasting entities, has its budget up on its website. So if you want to learn more, go to the source, bbg.gov, or you can also go to a really good website, bbgwatch.com, which tracks its movements in very minute detail. I would say this, though. Since my article came out, and since the outcry over some of the cuts, particularly focused on China, rang out, there has been a reversal made by the BBG to keep Cantonese on the air, and Tibetan, and I think a couple of other things. That is also up on the BBG website, and that is a sign that they do listen when we raise enough of an issue publicly about decisions that are made poorly.
Well, I think you just raised another good point where I think both Americans and English are equally guilty of the same problem, in that we just assume every piece of news and communication should be in English, and that's probably because we're very lazy. But in truth, you know, we have to recognise that not everybody's language is English as their second language. Therefore, we need to look at sort of communicating with a lot of disenfranchised people who don't have accurate and unbiased news in their own language as well, which is another part of the cuts at the moment, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. All the language services, service people who are not in the elite. I mean, in many ways, those language services in people's native languages are focused on an otherwise disenfranchised population, which may not have the facility to understand a sophisticated broadcasts in English. And, you know, also those language services have reporters who gather news from those countries. So it is a two-way street here. You've got Chinese speakers who can read the Chinese news, who can communicate with Chinese dissidents and people in China. I mean, it's just it deepens the coverage of China that we have a China service. This shouldn't really be so difficult to understand, and just feel right. It's foolish saying it.
Yes, indeed. <still. laughs> I know what you're saying. I'm going to interrupt you. I've got a guy screaming in my ear at the moment. My colleague over in the UK, Lee, he's asking, how is it that the traditional media in the USA don't appear to have picked up on what he describes as a hellish cut?
There has been some coverage of it. There has been some congressional coverage of this issue, which in fact reverse some bad decisions that had been made. But generally speaking, Voice of America, Radio Free Europe, all the other broadcasters, their news is directed at the world, not at the American audience. And this will blow your mind. They are not permitted by law to broadcast within the United States.
Uh-huh. Yes,
When you tell people this, they go, huh? What's the problem?
I know that only too well, because in my days of working with BBC shortwave transmitters, we actually had the same law in the United Kingdom.
And really?
So, absolutely. And so what we did, and you may wish to share this with some of your colleagues, and I'm very happy if you do, we actually contracted a satellite license or a frequency from the Luxembourg-based Astra network, which meant that we sent it by wire, which is not broadcast, over to Luxembourg. Luxembourg broadcast it first, and then, of course, everybody in England was able to listen to it. So we got round the law by using a satellite. And I'm sure our friends at Dish Network or EchoStar, as it was, or others, would be more than happy to help the VOA get out of trouble like that. And that's how we got round the law in the UK. Absolutely true story. Oh. So there are ways, you see.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
Let's move back to some to another one from Rens, who's in Holland. He just simply says, don't people in America realise that even in Holland, the VOA is a source of news? I have the stream on my web radio as a favourite. What are we supposed to do? Swap to Iranian radio? This is just a crazy idea. Get someone from the VOA to explain themselves. Good work on keeping RTI going and love postcard from Poprad. Thank you, Rens. It's kind of ironic that the VOA closes down and yet there's so many other countries, especially things like Iranian, where it's so easy for people around the world to tune into it.
You are so absolutely so right. Iran is investing a huge amount of money in broadcasting at the moment. So is China. Mm-hmm. So is Russia. Mm. You have got players around the world who see the potential of broadcasting. And these are not our friends. And they are moving in where we're moving out, and that, you know, the BBC was itself going down and may still be going down the road of closing down its radio broadcasting markets like China.
It's insane.
It is maddening. So thank you to your Dutch listener here for his response. He's absolutely right, and if you. Now, you can go on VOA's websites, which I encourage people to do, mm-hmm. and Radio for Europe's websites. Thanks to the internet, yes, they are there. And they do good stories. But a website has to be supported by, you know, a depth of journalistic experience to be something really good.
So, actually, Hella, what we could do at this point, if you don't mind, could you give us some of the best places where people can email and express their dissatisfaction at what's taking place or could take place at the VOA?
Yes. First of all, I would encourage them to contact the Broadcasting Board of Governors. Their website, as I mentioned, would be www.bbg.gov, G-O-V, mm-hmm. Where there would be contact information. BBG Watch is a great website created 2 years ago by a former VOA manager who was so outraged at what was happening. And they cover a great deal of what I've been talking about here. So that's bbgwatch.com. Mm-hmm. And you will always also find ways of sending them emails. You can certainly contact me by all means, hella.dale@heritage.org.
Okay, and I'll tell you what we'll do, boys and girls, is we'll put all those addresses on our website as well. So if you haven't had a chance to write them down because you're walking down the road or in your car, we'll put them all on the RTI website for you so you can pop across there and please do send them yourself. Don't forward them to me. It's more powerful if you do it. And I've got a head like a sieve, so I can forget to forward them. So please do it directly. And I'm sure, well, that's very kind of you, Helen, to actually offer that as well. And write in and tell people what you think. And also say to them what impact the Voice of America has had on you. Because then maybe somebody will wake up and smell the coffee.
Excellent. That's an excellent idea. And I just want to say that, you know, if you give me some of those responses, mm-hmm. we can put them together. We can put them on the Heritage Foundation's blog.
My pleasure.
And if you know, if you don't mind, I want to give out our web address.
Yes, please.
www.heritage.org.
So, nice and slowly, that's www.heritage.org.
Yes.
Right.
And we have a fantastic website. We have a blog where I cover a lot of these things, and which does get read by the government. I know that for a fact because I hear from them.
They're probably ringing you right now. Hella, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for that. We will forward the messages we've already had in, and later on in the programme we'll also recap all the addresses for you as well. Enjoy your sunshine in Washington, and thank you for joining us.
Eric, you enjoy yours. Thank you very much for calling.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Well, there you go. That was Helly Dale from the glory of Washington. Thanks, Helly. People don't seem to like the idea of closing down the VOA in English, do they, guys?
Well, so they shouldn't. I think it's absolutely despicable. I think what Helly said was absolutely spot on and right.
Yeah.
And I would just like to reiterate what I said. I can't believe that the Britain press are not doing anything on this. I think that is shameful and despicable.
Well, it is quite amazing, isn't it? And I mean, when the BBC started talking about reducing their world service, they decided to keep the English service part, and it was other languages, which is also a shame. But when you think of how many people around the world speak English or understand English, I think it's just going to be an amazing communication failure. What a shame.
Indeed. We've got to go there, boys and girls. We'll see you next week. Say goodbye, chaps.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mark didn't plug himself. He's from the Consumer Action Group, don't you know?
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.